I'm the dude. So that's what you call me.
Are you a virgin?
Yeah, not since I was 10.
Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret.
Come out to the coast. We get together, have a few laughs.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Can I return it if it doesn't fit?
It always fits. Eventually.
Welcome back to Movie Mingle. I'm Caveman.
And I'm Maggie.
And today we are on episode 60.
60!
6-0.
What?
We are in the 60s, baby.
How have we done this? We've just done it.
One at a time.
Yeah, man. Fuck.
Now it we're on 60.
Goes to show that you two listeners can drop 60 episodes of a podcast and for minimal money and a lot of time.
Minimal money, a lot of time.
But you can do it because we've done it.
You don't have a social life.
Yeah.
And I am behind on so
everything.
Much TV. Like, I keep up with movies.
Everything.
Not all movies, but yeah. A lot of movies I keep up on.
But all of our television?
Television is pretty much...
It's been so hard just to keep up with Daredevil, and Daredevil is great.
Yeah, I still haven't finished Invincible.
Yeah.
I still haven't finished Shogun, so I don't think I have any chance of catching up.
Look, if you're thinking of starting a podcast, just keep in mind it will take up a lot of your free time, but that's okay, because it's a lot of fun when you're doing it with somebody you love. 60! What are we doing today, honey?
Well, today's an animated episode.
Yes, it is.
And Maggie and I watched Coraline.
Ooh.
Which, this was only the second time I've seen Coraline.
Yeah, same. Did we see it in theater together?
I think we did.
Yeah, 2009, we would have been together still.
Corpse Bride had already come out.
Corpse Bride was a kind of a cute movie for us. We've had a couple experiences with Corpse Bride.
Corpse Bride was a movie that you and I saw as friends.
As friends, yeah.
We were just with some other friends and then watched
when your
Corpse Bride.
Uncle married your aunt, they had a Corpse Bride wedding topper on their cake, which I found a choice. But,
sure.
Yeah.
I mean, even in death, they're together.
Except they weren't, because they don't end up together in the end, those two characters. But
those two characters do not.
But yeah, Corpse Bride was a cute film that, you know, it definitely kind of hit us in the right time when it came out, you know, Tim Burton-y and everything. And then Coraline came along, and I don't remember the first time I saw this movie, but I know I have seen it. So I'm going to assume we saw it in theater. It's another Leica production.
Well, Coraline was directed by Henry Selick, same director that worked on The Nightmare Before Christmas, James and the Giant Peach.
I love James and the Giant Peach.
Monkey Bone with
Brendan Fraser?
Brendan Fraser, yeah.
I never saw that.
No. And I guess there was a Little Nightmares TV show that he directed.
Little Nightmares?
It's based on the video game that I'm playing currently.
Oh, yeah.
On Xbox.
Yeah.
But I couldn't find any information on who distributed it.
Maybe it's not out yet.
Well, it was made in 2017.
What?
And it just never...
Did it never air?
It says that one season was available, but it was also created by the Russo brothers.
Wow.
It's so random. Like,
was...
It's a fun little video game that's slightly gives you some good scares along
the
way.
Yeah, you've had some interesting moments with it. There have been a few times where you're like, I can't do this
I have to take a break because there are some creepy things that happen. And even though I love horror films, but when it comes to horror video games, I'm not great at it because I am
immersed
into the horror.
I remember.
Whereas in a movie, I am the spectator watching the person who's immersed.
When we started dating, I remember you were playing this video game. I remember the one with the Native American and the aliens. I remember that one very specifically.
Yes, that one was called Prey.
And then there was another one where I just kind of remember you running around a mall with a bunch of mannequins and having a really hard time with some of those levels. And I don't remember what game that was, but it was me finally seeing you be spooked by something for the first time.
Yeah.
And it was very interesting. It is funny how like scary video games get you, but scary movies don't.
I can't remember if it was Silent Hill.
It might have been a Silent Hill game.
Well, no, the one you're talking about is a standalone game about a detective who is looking for a serial killer, and then the serial killer ends up being more supernatural. All this to say, if that Little Nightmares video game turned TV series ever shows up, it's something that I think I'd be really interested in, especially if they used stop motion, because the video game itself looks a little bit in the stop motion world, even though it isn't, but it has that aesthetic to it. Coraline was written by Neil Gaiman.
Unfortunately.
This is another one of those things where...
Yeah, you're like, oh, everything's great, and I love these stories. Neil Gaiman did what? What he did... Oh. Oh.
So...
Oh.
He hasn't been prosecuted for anything, but...
He's admitted to some things, to some inappropriate relationships.
Allegedly,
yeah.
There were some allegations have been brought against him for multiple different things ever from the 70s on. You know, it sucks. Once again, it's one of those things where, you know, are you going to just enjoy the art for it being for art's sake because more than one person worked on this project?
And it's hard because, like, I really liked Neil Gaiman's stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, did you ever know that he wrote a book on Norse mythology?
Yes.
And I have that book, the audio version, that he reads. And it's fucking charming and hysterical. But I am just like, well, I'll never listen to that again. Stardust, one of my, like, top five comfort movies.
Stardust is
And it's one of those comfort movies that I don't talk about a whole lot. But, like, when I'm in a mood, I'm like, oh, my God, Stardust.
Well, it's got
Charlie Cox.
It's got a young Charlie Cox.
Sweet baby Charlie Cox.
It's got a young Henry Cavill.
Yeah, fucking Daredevil versus Superman. Yep. And it's such a sweet film. And I'm like, yeah, aw. But I'm choosing not to let that one ruin it.
There's a lot that I can put aside because...
Good Omens is going to be tough because... Season one of Good Omens was phenomenal. Season two left us on a cliffhanger that broke me. Broke me. Desperately. Season two. And then season three was supposed to be a big production. And then the allegations hit. And then it was pushed back.
Well,
and now it's a 90-minute movie. And it's like, and Gaiman has nothing to do with it. And it's like, we deserve more about the end of these characters' story than 90 minutes. But fucking Gaiman ruined it for all of us, so...
Well, and not only did Good Omens get ruined...
Yeah.
But season two of Sandman was canceled from Netflix.
I thought they were still going to release it.
I
was always under the assumption that they were still going to release it.
From what I read, Sandman was 2025,
they
said Sandman was canceled.
Oh,
and
God. Damn that man. Sandman was so fucking good.
Disney Plus also canceled their project. They were going to make Graveyard the Book into a movie or show. And that's a really good book. That's the other thing. I can pretty much put aside a lot of the movies and projects that he's worked on.
Yeah, that have already happened.
Like, he's so influential in pop culture with a lot of things that have come out. I mean, a couple of the best Doctor Who episodes were written by him.
The TARDIS becomes a person. That episode still haunts me. What a great episode.
He's worked in comics forever. Not just writing his own stuff, but also writing for other characters. I mean, one of the other things that happened after these allegations was that Dark Horse completely dropped him, and they've been his
publisher
for a very long time. It sucks.
It sucks, and
it sucks when big artists, especially writers of books that you've
fallen in love with,
especially somebody like him, because unlike J.K. Rowling, who's really only written one story. Neil Gaiman has written so many stories.
He has had his hands in pop culture for years.
So he's
and everybody has something that he's done that they love.
Of course,
whether you know it or not, you're like, fuck.
And I'm choosing to like the projects because of all the hard work that other people put into it.
Yeah.
Especially things like Stardust, because
it
is such a beautiful movie made with perfect actors.
I know. And he narrates parts of Stardust, so he's there, but like I don't care because like I don't view that movie as a Neil Gaiman movie. I view it as Baby Charlie Cox.
Absolutely.
Baby Henry Cavill. Fucking Michelle Pfeiffer is having the time of her life in that film.
Michelle Pfeiffer's great in that.
Robert De Niro playing a gay space pirate. Like, my God. Who cross-dresses? Like, it's everything. And then you're like, fucking Gaiman. You know, I've given up my Harry Potter fandom. I do not care about Harry Potter that much anymore. I'm not going to watch the new series because that bitch is still actively, constantly pursuing anti-trans rules and laws. She pushes all the money that we have made her, that we have made that woman. She is using that to push anti-trans laws in the UK. Like, she is actively out there doing evil. The fact that she became Voldemort is insane. Like, what kind of timeline are we in that fucking she became Voldemort? So I won't give her any more of my money. I'm not going to give Gaiman any more of my money, but it's not going to stop me from watching Stardust on those lazy Saturday afternoons when I need that comfort film.
It's so weird when somebody, especially like an author, writes so much against a certain thing.
Mm-hmm. And then turns out to be that thing. The bad guy.
I mean, it's the same thing with Gaiman. Like, how many Gaiman stories talk about so much good in the world and so many
strong women?
Strong women. And,
yeah.
And then you turn around and
you're like,
everything you wrote? Like, are you just writing for the paycheck and just making flowery language so that people are in love with it?
I think people...
Or do you just get so caught up in yourself and...
It's probably that.
Your power.
Yeah.
Because of your popularity and your celebrity.
You know, I don't remember who I can attribute this quote to. But I was watching something recently. It could have been a TikTok. It could have been a documentary. I don't know. But I was watching something recently where this woman was saying the staircase to success is necessary, right? You have to walk up that staircase of success because if you take the elevator of success, it's going to fuck you up. And I think a lot of people have... I mean, not to say that Gaiman took the elevator. He's been out there pushing shit for years. But Rowling definitely took the elevator, and that's why she's so messed up, because her head wasn't right to begin with. I don't know. Part of me feels... I don't know Neil Gaiman. I've never met him. I'm not even the biggest fan of his work, even though there are things of his that I genuinely like. But I just think that power and money corrupts people. And there was a time when shitty behavior was socially acceptable. But all of this to say, we're not going to let him ruin the fact that we watched this movie, that we enjoyed this movie, and we're not going to talk about him as much anymore. So yeah, he wrote it, he had something to do with it, but we're going to focus on the other people that made this cute little film.
Well, the other people that worked on this film were the composer, Bruno Kulaes. He worked on 216 projects since the late 70s.
Jesus! This music was so fucking good.
It's so good.
Did you notice the really eerie, soft violin that would play in the backgrounds during certain scenes? Like, I specifically remember it when Coraline's in the garden, and there's just this really soft, eerie violin.
The first time she sees the garden come alive.
But it wasn't, like, the big song and dance of it all. It's just this very eerie, quiet, soft violin in the background of scenes. And I was floored by that because it was so atmospheric. Really well done. Yeah, this music is everything. And I didn't have the time that I usually take to kind of do my own personal research after watching movies. Like, I barely went on IMDb to check out trivia. So I wasn't able to pull up his stuff, but looking at it now, at the very least.
He's a French film and television composer. Like I said, 216 projects since the late 70s.
He did Wolfwalkers, which I always wanted to watch, but we never did. That movie that was like, it came out, I think, 2020. It was a pandemic film, and it was an animated film they dropped on Apple about a girl that kind of looked like Merida. Oh, with big, crazy red hair, and it's, like, set in Ireland, and it's about wolves or werewolves or something. And it was something I always wanted to watch. But, yeah, his music was so creepy and beautiful and just perfect.
Really well done.
Yeah.
Cinematographer was Pete Kozaszek. He was the same cinematographer that worked on Nightmare Before Christmas, James and the Giant Peach, mm-hmm. Corpse Bride. I mean, there's a reason these movies look
very similar
to each other. He worked for ILM. He worked on Star Wars. He did stop motion for Inner Space, Willow, Dang. Ghostbusters 2,
Dang.
RoboCop 2 and 3.
This motherfucker made my childhood.
He made...
You fell asleep to Ghostbusters 2 the other night, and I let it go for a really long time, because I don't... Actually, I prefer Ghostbusters 2 to Ghostbusters 1, personally.
But I grew up on Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah. That was the one I always liked more. I mean, not to say I don't like Ghostbusters.
Oh, no, Ghostbusters is...
Great,
of course
but
it is.
Ghostbusters 2 has a soft spot in my heart, and I will defend the fact that the song is better in the second one than it is in the first one, but anyways.
Rotten Tomatoes has Coraline at a 91% from critics and a 74% from audiences, and I wonder if that's still based off of, like, when it first
the
came
first
out.
The first time? No!
I don't know, because... Because
I could see people going into this movie not, like, with their kids, not knowing what to expect, right?
For whatever reason, I remember not liking this movie.
Really? Because I know people who are obsessed with this movie the way that you and I are Star Wars.
I understand.
I know people that... So, shout out to our longtime listener and my dear sweet friend, Randy, who listens to this podcast. She loves this film. It is a comfort movie for her. Her and her sister went to see the Leica exhibit when it rolled through town, which I'm a little jealous of because I would have loved to have been a part of that, even though I'm not as big into Coraline as she is. But she said it was absolutely beautiful. Like, she loves this film. It is.
I can only imagine how amazing that was to see.
Oh, I bet. I mean, knowing what the in the same space the exhibits were for the Marvel touring exhibit and the Minecraft one, I bet the Leica one was just spectacular. I mean, when we saw those puppets from Nightmare Before Christmas, goddamn. I remember enjoying it when I saw it for the first time in that way that you're like, oh, that's a fun movie. It's pretty. It wraps up happily, you know, although that remains to be seen because Coraline's parents are the fucking worst. The movie ends in a certain way and you're like, oh, that was good and fun. And then I just like went on with life, not really giving it a lot of thought.
Yeah.
But I know people who fucking love this movie. In fact, when I brought it up at work that I was watching it, I had several of my much younger coworkers being like, oh, I love that movie. I watched it all the time as a kid, but they're also now spooky goth kids now. So it doesn't surprise me whatsoever. They watched this movie a lot growing up. The fact that it only has a... Did you say 74 or 79 from audiences?
74.
That's a low C, and that's a little shocking.
It's...
Because I swear to God, I know people
lower
who...
Than it should be.
Just flat out worship this film.
I mean, you were talking about, you know, the sets for this. You and I had the great opportunity to watch Nightmare Before Christmas mm-hmm. at the El Capitan Theater in Hollywood.
Yeah, forever ago.
Where down in their basement, they had the original sets and puppets from the movie mm-hmm. that they were keeping under dark.
And also by in their basement, Caveman means a like an exhibit space that is inside of the El Capitan that if you... Because we've been there a few times to see some good films, and you can go down there and see costumes and props and stuff, right? Like, it's a Disney-owned space. They, like, oh, here's the new Avengers film, and underneath, experience the costumes. And you walk through and you look at shit. It's not just a basement. But
it's a dirty old...
It's a dirty old dripping in the corner. Spooky. But no, we got to see puppets from Nightmare Before Christmas that weren't supposed to exist anymore, which is why they were kept in such dim lighting, because light is one of the things
that
helped.
We got to see the actual Jack Skellington that was in the film.
And the beautiful curved mountain that
there
him and
so
Sally
there were
stand
sets
on.
And so many cool things.
Yeah. I wish I had pictures of that still. That was on an old digital camera that has gone away.
But Coraline was filmed inside of a 140,000 square foot warehouse.
This movie, despite the fact that it was stop motion and everything is small, this movie's fucking giant.
Oh, no, yeah.
Like, you can tell that the sets are so impressive.
It was shot in a warehouse in Hillsboro, Oregon. The stage itself was divided into, like, 50 sections. And in those 50 sections, there were 150 sets.
God.
There were 3 miniature Victorian mansions, a 42-foot apple orchard, and a whole model of the city of Ashland, Oregon.
They were like, oh, we moved to Oregon. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And then when they showed the street sign, it was, did you say an entire reproduction of Ashland?
It's a complete reproduction of Ashland, Oregon, including the tiniest details, like a banner that says Oregon Shakespeare Festival.
See, because I remember seeing that. They
actually had in Ashland.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know. Ashland is a very important city to both of us in separate ways. And that, for me, it was where some of my parents' best friends lived. And so whenever we were in the area, which wasn't often, but weirdly was often, when we would be passing through Ashland, we would stop and stay with these lovely human beings. And so that's how I know Ashland. But you know Ashland because...
My mom was born... My mom was born on an Indian reservation in California. Mm-hmm. But then they immediately took her home to... to their house in Ashland.
Yeah, your mom grew up in Ashland. I was supposed to go to college there town. With my high school long-distance boyfriend that I strung on for way too long. Like, that's where he went to college. So the fact that this movie is set in Ashland, I was sort of like, oh, crap. But they never say that it's set in Ashland, Oregon. But as soon as I saw this Shakespeare Festival, I was like, oh, damn, I know where that is.
So, of course, the garden scene was the most complicated set created for the film, and of course it was, because you can just tell as Coraline is walking through it with all the little details and lights and everything moving. They had hundreds of handmade flowers that were created to grow.
Fucking crazy.
One frame at a time, so that it looked like flowers were growing and moving and glowing. And it took 28 animators to shoot the scenes, producing 100 seconds of animation per week.
Fucking
100 seconds a week.
Oh my God. Is how long. Could you imagine?
I would love to be involved in something, a project like this.
Would just you?
Because I want to learn how they do it, how they plan it. I could
see you, actually, yeah.
How they go about planning things and creating things and where to put the camera, mm-hmm. and just going one step at a time.
It is such a gorgeous art to create things by stop motion. And I feel like that's something that I don't want to say that we as a culture take for advantage, but I kind of feel like we do a little bit, because we look at animation and we look at what they can do these days with computers. And then you look at hand-drawn animation and you're like, oh wow, it's all amazing. It's all beautiful. But I don't think people really clock the effort that is put into stop motion. I don't remember what it was for, but I do vaguely remember watching a scene of, like, a behind the scenes scene of somebody, you know, of a stop motion character, like, walking across the set that it was in. And in the background, like, you see the character moving in real time, and in the background you see the sped up version of all of the animators going in and changing everything over the course of a time.
Yeah.
And the love and the care that they put into stop motion is insane. I mean, for God's sakes, they had to, like, hand paint thousands of popcorn kernels pink and red to look like cherry blossom trees. Like, that shit is bonkers to me, and I love it. It is such a beautiful art. I don't think I have the patience for it. More so, I don't think I have the creativity for it. But I respect the hell out of it, that's for sure.
It was made for $60 million, and it made $117 million domestically.
Woohoo! Good. Good for them.
And $69 million internationally, and another $70 million on home media. This was such a hit.
This was a huge movie. How did people still only give it 74?
I know.
It doesn't add up.
Yeah, the amount of people. I mean, just the amount. The fact that it did 117 almost doubled its production budget. It made half of what it made in theaters on home video. Yeah. That is a huge
hit. That's a huge number.
Maybe it's just that
the people that I know that love this movie do not have Rotten Tomato accounts. You know?
The biggest fans are not going on Rotten Tomatoes.
Although, I guess if you're listening to this and you are a huge fan of Coraline, I think maybe you need to go on Rotten Tomatoes and get that score up a little bit, because a 74 is ridiculous.
You might have a point, because I think they're all on Metascore, because Metascore gave it an 80.
Yeah, see, that's still a low end, but...
It is, and IMDb gave it a 7.8 out of 10, which is pretty much the same as Rotten Tomatoes. So the critics in this case were correct, because it absolutely... Like, I may have... And maybe, I don't know, maybe it was something to do with Nightmare Before Christmas was such a beloved movie. Mm-hmm. Corpse Bride came out, and it wasn't...
Corpse Bride was a pretty... Was it? I thought it was a big hit. I guess I'm thinking about it culturally. I enjoyed Corpse Bride
the first time I watched it.
Yeah,
I never heard people celebrate it the way Nightmare Before Christmas was.
I haven't heard people celebrate it the way they celebrate Coraline.
Right.
Yeah.
But then Coraline came out after, and I don't know if I just wasn't in the right headspace or why I probably would have. If Rotten Tomatoes was something that I could have accessed back then, I may have agreed with the...
Low C.
The 74%.
Yeah.
But after watching it...
Last night,
it definitely has gone up for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so a grand total of $256 million, a quarter of a billion-dollar stop-motion movie.
Jesus.
And... I think it deserves
more.
I think it deserved, it deserved exactly, it deserved exactly what I think it got. It was nominated for 46 awards and won 8.
Yeah.
It was nominated for 1 Oscar for Best Animated Feature.
Which went to?
It went to Up.
Yeah. No, that I get it. Up's the better film in its own. Is it though? Because like Up, the thing about Up.
See, and I think when we did the episode on Up, we were going to be like,
we're going to see whether or not Coraline.
Because the other nominated movie was Fantastic Mr. Fox that year. So now we've seen all three of them. Of these 5.
Oh my God. Of the 5?
Well, Princess and the Frog was also nominated that year. And we talked about it before, but The Secret of the Kells.
Yeah, that's the one we haven't seen.
Who was made from the same producers that worked on The Triplets of Belleville. But
maybe as a bonus episode, we need to do
the other two
and just do a gauntlet.
Well, the fact that we now have watched all three of these movies between Up, Coraline, and Fantastic Mr. Fox.
And The Princess and the Frog, because that's a great fucking movie.
But of these three that we've watched for the podcast and have talked about, don't answer yet, but start thinking about which of the three
I already have my answer
that you think
is the best, is the worthiest. One.
Don't say it.
Okay.
We'll get there.
Okay. But I don't have to think about it. I have my answer.
I'm glad you have your answer.
Wow, that is fascinating. Any other year, if this movie came out now, I think that they would get the Oscar for it.
I haven't seen Inside Out 2 yet.
No.
But the fact that it lost to a movie that doesn't have any
dialogue.
That
was made on a free animation program.
Yeah.
And we've talked about how we watched The Wild Robot and it broke us. I don't know if we've mentioned that on the podcast.
Which also lost to Flo.
Yeah. Well, The Wild Robot was one of the most beautiful films I've ever seen, and it devastated my soul.
I think
so. And we keep, Caveman and I, a little look behind the scenes here, friends. We keep, we'll be sitting on the couch and we'll be like, okay, what do we want to watch tonight? Do we want to catch up on our dumb TV? Do we want to watch a movie? It's not a podcast movie night, so we don't have to worry about that. And we keep being like, Flo? And then we're like, we're not in the mood.
Flo? No.
Because we don't want to.
Look at that. Wild Robot is number 2 on my 2024 list of.
If Wild Robot broke me that succinctly and Flo won the Oscar, I just kind of can't right now. Like, no, with everything going on, I just can't.
But I
can't cry
really
that
want to. And no. If you don't jump on board soon,
well,
I might just watch
myself. Fucking pitter-patter, honey. Let's get after it eventually. Our weekend's coming up.
Eventually. We got Dakota Fanning playing our main character of Coraline Jones.
I cannot tell you why, but I feel like there was a time there where I wasn't a big fan of the Fannings in general.
Any specific
reason? Might have just been because they were kind of in everything for a while there. Like, for, like, the mid-2000s, they were in fucking everything. They were all over it. And at the best of times, I have hard times with kid actors, because sometimes you're like, I can see this kid acting, and it's horrific. But I can't 1,000% say exactly what or why I had against the poor girl, but these days, she is an incredible actress. She had a short part in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which she was killer in. I enjoyed Ocean's 8, although I don't remember her in Ocean's 8, but I enjoyed the hell out of it. Hell, I came in while you were watching The Watchers, and I was like shocked at what a good performance she gave in that. Yes, she was in some of the Twilight movies. We will forgive her for that. But she's done a lot, and she's a very good little actress. And I think more than anything for me, it was just like, this bitch is in everything. But
she was.
Yeah. And she was kind of like the go-to kid actor for a long time.
The first project she worked on was doing the main character of My Neighbor Totoro, the English dub. She played Satsuki, who's the main character in that. She's been around now in our lives forever, even though we were adults when she was a child. I think the first thing that she really became present in was Man on Fire with Denzel Washington.
Which I feel like I saw once forever ago, but I don't remember.
And then she, of course, was acting opposite of Tom Cruise in War of the Worlds.
Which I never saw, but I did drive through the destruction on the back lot of Universal Studios a couple of times. Yeah, she was in Charlotte's Web and Uptown Girls and Kim Possible. She did a lot of stuff as a young actress. But I just, I don't know. For me, she was always just kind of there. I was never like, meh, one way or the other. But she does a great job in this. I mean, she's a young kid in this movie. Supposedly this movie was originally supposed to be live action, and then they decided to animate it. I wasn't thinking that it was Dakota Fanning at all. I was just like, this is just Coraline. And she does a very fine, admirable job for being, the main character of a film.
Yeah, absolutely.
Luckily she probably got to sit in her, like, comfy clothes in a sound booth and just record all of her lines while everybody else did the hard work. But good for her. She's out there. Her and her whole family are just sort of out there. They're making their living. They're having fun. She was phenomenal as Squeaky Fromm in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. She was so good.
Next we have Terry Hatcher playing Mel Jones, the mother.
The funny thing about Terry Hatcher is that she sort of looks like a villain whose face has been stretched over a skeleton.
Hey, be nice to Terry Hatcher.
I am not being mean to Terry Hatcher. I'm just saying they replicated her smile well.
She was my Lois Lane growing up.
Yeah, I fucking loved Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman. I don't remember anything about that show, and I bet you if we watched a couple episodes, we'd be like, oh boy. Ugh,
man, this is
But we watched rough the stuff. Fuck out of that. That was a giant primetime Superman TV show that lasted for 4 years.
Jeez.
I never watched a second of Desperate Housewives, and I never will.
She is probably better known for her role in Desperate Housewives. She also was in Tomorrow Never Dies, mm-hmm. One of Pierce Brosnan's James Bond movies.
Is she one of the Bond girls that lives or dies? Or do you remember?
Ooh. I think she lives.
Yeah.
She's an old flame.
That was kind of before they started they always killed off the Bond girls, but I feel like Daniel Craig's Bond girls were just ruthlessly murdered left, right, and center.
They were.
One of the things I know her most from is Seinfeld.
You know Terry Hatcher
most? I know Terry Hatcher most from Seinfeld. For me, it is Seinfeld and Lois and Clark. And the reason is because she's in an episode, she is dating Jerry, and I'm almost positive the episode that she is in, no, that's Daphne from Frasier. She's the virgin that loses her virginity to JFK. But no, the episode that she is in, she and Jerry have been dating for a few weeks. Jerry does not know her name and is desperately trying to figure it out, but he knows that it rhymes with a part of the female anatomy. And so he cannot figure out what this woman's name is, and there's a whole bunch of hijinks. And then finally, when she realizes that, oh, and then I'm pretty sure she's also they're real and they're spectacular. Because, like, Elaine goes in to see whether or not her breasts are real. But anyways, I'm pretty sure that's the same episode. Sometimes I watch Seinfeld's episodes and I'm like, all of this happened in one 22-minute episode? Like, Christ. But her character's name was Dolores. But nonetheless, yeah, Terry Hatcher I remember most from Seinfeld and Lois and Clark. And, you know, she's an admirable actress. Like, she does a good job. It's just that, like, mainly the episode or the picture that they show of her on Google, she has this huge, creepy grin, and it looks a lot like the other mother from this movie, which is why I'm like, wow, they really captured that. Good for her. The mother in this movie sucks. She is an awful mother.
Yeah, she is.
She should not have been a mother. She's a mother that does not care about her child, that cares more about her. I found it very interesting that it seemed like Coraline and the dad had sort of a, like, not like an abused way around them, but the way that they, like, talked about her behind her back and both seemed to be afraid of her seemed that she, you know, made it seem like she was very domineering and bossy. And she's not a great mom to begin with. And then other mother is a psycho. But the real mother isn't that great.
Demons usually are pretty psycho.
Yeah. Like, she's kind of a bitch.
Next we have John Hodgman playing the dad.
God, John Hodgman. I know him from so many comedy movies.
I mean, mainly John Hodgman's known for The Daily Show.
Yeah.
That's, like, the most he's done.
But he always, but there was a while there where he popped up in everything.
He would pop up in everything. He's done stuff. He's been in episodes of everything, at least. I mean, every comedy show, scripted show that you could think of probably has him in at least one episode.
Baby Mama, Movie 43, Pitch Perfect 2, you know, like, John Hodgman is just...
I mean, he's in Community.
Yeah.
He's in...
He's done stuff in DuckTales and a bunch of cartoons. He's done Flight of the Conchords. Like, the man's done so much. And I'm okay with that, because, frankly, he's a delight. The dad character is very... You know, he's the best father either, but he seems to care about Coraline a little bit more than the mother does.
Just a little bit.
I liked that other father was ultimately, like, helpful to Coraline in the end. But John Hodgman's just, God, he's just done stuff forever.
Yeah, really funny guy.
Now, we can talk about Jennifer Saunders and Don French essentially as the same person, because they have been a comedy duo for so long that I'm pretty sure they came out of different wombs at the same time and then immediately held hands and did a comedy routine that just killed the British public. French and Saunders have done just countless spoofs. I kind of fell in love with them originally because they did a fantastically funny Lord of the Rings spoof. They've been in 100,000 things. They're a very famous British comedy duo. They had their own TV show. They're probably most known for Absolutely Fabulous.
Right,
though. Sure. Ab Fab has a giant cult following.
Absolutely.
I've watched a lot of Ab Fab over the years. French and Saunders, the TV show. Was the voice of the grandmother or the fairy godmother. Jennifer Saunders is the godmother in Shrek 2, which we'll be watching soon.
Don French was the lady in the painting.
Yeah, in Harry Potter. Yeah. Like, they've done, Like, name a British show and they've been on it.
I'm sure.
Yeah, and I adore them.
Mrs.
You know.
Beaver and Narnia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're just, they've always been there and we love them. You know, French and Saunders, long may they reign. Like, and interestingly, because Jennifer Saunders is very tall and lanky and Dawn French is kind of short and squat. You know, it's one of those comedy duos. It's your Laurel and Hardy, the tall and the short fat, right? The tall skinny and the short fat.
Yeah.
So they actually voiced opposite characters in this movie where Jennifer Saunders was the short fat character, even though she's the tall lanky one. And Dawn French was the tall lanky one when she's usually the... Yeah, so I thought that was cute that they kind of swapped that up. Also, I think it's sort of implied that they're old burlesque dancers, but I was sort of shocked at some of the costumes, quote unquote, that the characters wear.
Yeah, no,
I was very
this child's animated film
has some tig old bitties in it.
A little more PG-13, maybe.
There are some tig old bitties. You know, they're also like 90 tig old bitties, but they're there nonetheless. But the next two guys that we have to talk about.
Well, I want to talk about Keith David.
Haven't we lavished enough love on Keith David? No, it's impossible.
It's impossible.
We fucking love
the man
Keith David.
Deserves everything.
He deserves the world.
He plays the cat.
Yeah, get that deep voice, that slanky way.
You know, he was in this film mm-hmm. that was nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah.
And the same year, he was in The Princess and the Frog, nominated for an Oscar.
He's the villain in The Princess and the Frog. Yeah. And that villain is such a good Disney villain.
Yep.
Dr. Fancifer or something like that? I don't remember his name. I'm a fan. But, yeah, he fucking long may Keith David reign. That man, he's 68 now.
Yeah.
I love him so much.
Yeah, he's only 68.
Yeah. He's also 6'2". That's a tall
He's
man.
He's a tall guy.
Yeah.
Of course, he was in They Live mm-hmm. with Roddy Piper.
The Thing.
Yeah, you finally got to see him as Childs in The Thing.
God, he was so hot.
He's so good in that. Yeah. I mean,
our kids know him and love him from Has-Been Hotel.
400 projects this man has been in.
Jesus Christ. Also Community.
He was in Community as well.
400.
400.
This man is a character actor. He is, honestly, like, the man deserves his own honorary Oscar for just being in so many great fucking things. Keith David, we love you, and we know you're listening. Please come on our show with us. Please come to our small little apartment.
Keith David.
Shake our hands and then... bring that voice onto this podcast so that we could die a little bit on the inside with joy. God, fuck, do we love him. And his smile. That man's got a smile that could light up a room. He is so handsome.
Did you know that his role in The Thing was the first
I think we brought
movie
that up.
That he ever was ever
yeah,
in?
That it was his first film.
It was his first film. He was in like a TV movie before. Mm-hmm. Love.
We love Keith David.
That man so much.
Yeah. The next man that we have to talk about.
Another man that I would love to have on the podcast and just would not be able to say anything.
No, nothing whatsoever.
I would stare at him and be frightened to talk.
See, and I would annoy him by the amount of times I mispronounced his first name.
Yeah, because he would say Wean.
Wean McShane.
Instead of Ian.
Ian McShane.
Good old Ian McShane.
Ian McShane, who is 5'7", so he's barely taller than me, although I think that might be a little bit of a lie. I know he is a tiny man, hence why I call him Wean McShane. He is an incredible British character actor with this deep, gravelly voice. He plays the Russian neighbor. And it does all the
weird. The man from upstairs is essentially what he's called.
And Ian McShane has been... in all the John Wick movies. He was in the third or fourth. He was in the fourth Pirates of the Caribbean. Bless his soul for that paycheck. He has done Kung Fu Panda. He has done Hot Rod. He's the dad in Hot Rod that Andy Samberg is constantly like the entire reason Andy Samberg is on the... track the trajectory that he is in that film is to prove to his stepdad Ian McShane that he's a man, and Ian McShane refuses to acknowledge it.
He was in Game of Thrones.
He was in Game of Thrones. He
was in the Golden Compass as the more villainous polar bear.
Mm-hmm. And most importantly, he was in Deadwood.
His best role ever.
My beloved with my beloved Timothy Oliphant, who is having a resurgence in my life right now. I am
Al
Swindon.
This is bullshit. 23 men hired. All on our way, this squaw fucking idiot. Proves in 8 words he's incompetent and a fucking liar. He kind of got Adam's telegram more than 4 hours ago, yet he expects me to believe that in 4 hours he can prudently assess the qualities of 23 hires. On our way means they're getting drunk and blown in some saloon in Cheyenne and running their mouths about this big fucking filibustering expedition they've been commissioned for under command of the famous Hawkeye, the laziest, most shit-faced, whoremongering cocksucker to ever piss my money away.
I'm going through a major Timothy Oliphant, like, resurgence right now. I'm not going to explain why, but I am. And I'm very happy for it because I love that tall, lanky son of a bitch. But Ian McShane in I barely watched Deadwood. And even I know about Swingen and what a great character he was. Just that perfect, leathery face, that gnarled voice, that grim, I will fuck you up attitude, perfect for a Western. My love for Ian McShane will never die, even though I constantly call him Wean McShane. But he's just so small. He's going to be in that ballerina movie, too, that John Wick spinoff, yeah. Which I'm not curious about, but I'll probably watch with you.
I'll probably watch it eventually, and I don't have to wait. I don't have to watch it in theaters, but I'll watch it eventually.
Ian McShane, wait a minute.
He was also in... I'm a big Jonathan Glazer fan, and he was who did Sexy Beast, and Ian McShane was in that with Ray Winstone and Ben Kingsley.
He is 82. We are not long with Ian McShane, and that makes me so sad.
Don't say that.
He was also in that terrible Hercules movie with The Rock, so.
Yeah.
You know, the man's done some stinkers.
Of course.
But he's done a lot.
Long enough career, everybody's a stinker in there, but
fuck, I just love him so much. I'm never unhappy to see him pop up in something. I remember when he joined Game of Thrones, I was like, really? That's gonna take me out of it, because I'm just gonna see him and be like, that's Ian McShane. I don't even remember what character he played, but I remember he did a great fucking job.
He was essentially like, you know, the Hound is this kind of like uncontrollable beast.
Yes, and he was like the soft man that somehow tamed the Hound.
It's like turning a life sentence murderer into a born again Christian.
Yeah, that was Ian McShane's role. Was
I'm going
to
bring you to
change the Hound.
Change your outlook on life. God.
And only Ian McShane can do that. This cast is full of just some stone-cold bangers for me. And my God, I just adore Ian McShane to no end.
Now, I don't know who Robert Bailey Jr. is. He plays the character of Wyborn or Wybie.
Mm-hmm. I didn't like Wybie. Because his head was so heavy that he couldn't keep it up. And I don't know why I found that annoying. Looking over Mr. Bailey Jr.'s work, I don't
the look of the movie.
See anything.
45 episodes of The Night Shift, which that's...
What's The Night Shift?
Series from 2014 to 2017. It's a...
Is that Noah Wiley?
Drama.
I don't recognize... Oh, nope, he was in The Happening. I recognize that, even though I didn't watch it, and I never will. He was in Bubble Boy and Mission to Mars. Hibbly. He's also in For All Mankind, which hopefully is a better thing. I don't recognize this man's work. I did not particularly like the character, but I did like the character. Oh, wait, he was in Dragonfly? I fucking loved Dragonfly. Did you ever watch that movie?
Yeah, with...
Kevin Costner. Dad and I really loved Dragonfly, and whenever it'd come on TV, because there was a while there when that movie was like all over like TNT, we would sit down and we would watch it no matter what part we came into it. And that was a part of that early 2000s like weirdly supernatural dramas that existed, right? That was one of the many where you're just watching this average film and you're like, oh, wait a minute, it was ghosts or it was angels or it was something paranormal the whole time. But for some reason, that particular movie really, oh my God, it has, Dragonfly has a 7% on Rotten Tomatoes. I need to rewatch this. It's been so long. But yeah, that was
pretty bad. Like, it's got a 6.1 on IMDb.
Yeah. 7% is
7% is pretty rough. Somebody has it out for,
I don't know how much it made, but it only made $52 million. I don't know how much it was. I mean, for God's sakes, like, Kathy Bates is in this movie?
25 on Metascore.
Oh boy. Yeah. Like, it was like What Lies Beneath and The Mothman Prophecies and all those other, like, weirdly, like, supernatural films from the early 2000s. Yeah. So, yeah, he was in Dragonfly. Robert Bailey Jr., you were great in this role, but there's something about the way that his head was always, like, cocked down that I think it just bothered me.
It fit the aesthetic of the movie.
It did.
Like, even if you think about Ian McShane's character with those long legs.
Those tiny, skinny legs and that huge body. Yeah. I know.
Going for a look.
And it achieved that.
And when you
look.
Go to the other world and he's got the button eyes and he's still doing
the
that.
The mute mouth.
He's
very
talk.
Sort of like put upon.
It's very disturbing in a way. And
his character doesn't exist in the novel, by the way. He was made for the movie specifically.
It's all right.
Yeah, but yeah, good for you, man.
As soon as we started watching this movie, I felt like I just immediately was like, why did I dislike this movie? What's going to happen?
Why did you dislike this movie?
I don't know. And because immediately I was just like, this music is great. I'm really liking the camera movements.
The vibe.
The stop motion, of course, was very impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Transitions, like the way they transitioned from scene to scene, were really creative.
Just that scene where she's looking down the tunnel and the tunnel pulls away.
Yeah.
And you can tell that is an in-camera effect.
Yeah.
That they took one of those tunnels that we get our cat and they painted the inside of it and they just collapsed it and then pulled it out.
I wrote down, the tunnel that Coraline crawls down reminded me of the alien from Nope's throat.
Nope.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great movie to make it. I mean, how many kids have always wished that they had, like, the perfect version of what they think they would want their parents to be? Yeah, I feel like that's something that a lot of people can.
Yeah, no, it's a very relatable film, especially, like, moving as a kid. You didn't move as a kid, but I did. Moving as a kid was awful. You know, you leave the people that you knew and love, you leave your school, you know, you go, I think we talked about this on Inside Out, you go to a new place, and you don't know people, especially at 12, it's a really hard thing. And I felt like it really captured, like, Coraline's angst in a beautiful way, because we also are very aware of what 12-year-old kids are like. And this movie is a really beautifully captured film. Like, it's such a gorgeous moment. The idea of having parents that are nicer to you, that care more about you, especially because these parents were very disconnected. They didn't seem to care a lot about their child. You know, it was all very, and like, I get it. There are days when I'm like, when our kids come along and they want my attention and I'm like, I will.
Can you please not?
Please not. Like, I can't do it right now. But it seemed to me like that was a common thing for Coraline, that she really put up with a lot of her parents' indifference, which made, you know, the other world so much more magical.
Sure.
Clearly, this demon has been there for a while doing this thing. YB talks about how they're not supposed to rent any, you know, apartments out to people with children. YB's great aunt, his grandmother's daughter, you know, was one of the victims of other mother. Like, you know, this is an evil demon who's set to prey upon children for whatever reason. And I kind of like that we never know why. Just that she's just been out there doing this for a very long time.
And I mean, I think she, I feel like the demon haunts the house itself.
In a weird way.
It's tied to the house.
Yeah. Because, like, although the actresses, you know, French and Saunders, they have a mat on their front porch that says no whistling in the apartment, which is because whistling is it's a superstition against whistling in theaters. But also there's the superstitions about whistling out in the forest and at night because it can attract demons. The mice that Ian McShane's character is trying to train for his circus. they talk to him and tell him things from other mother. The cat clearly is this weird, like, pseudo demon that comes and goes. It's such an interesting world. It is so clever. It's
very interesting, yes.
If we moved to a brand new house, especially in the middle of nowhere, creepy Oregon.
Yes.
And my child was given, like, the next day, my child was given a doll that looked just like her. That doll would go in the fireplace so fucking fast, it's not even funny. I would have just been like, nope, and into the fireplace.
Like, I'm sorry, like, we just moved to this place.
No way.
So we just happened to move to this random place, and the first thing we see is a doll that looks just like our kid.
Same, like outfit and everything?
Everything.
That doll would go into the fireplace, and we would find a new apartment while staying at a hotel.
And then I would drive, like, 100 miles away and scatter the ashes as I drove.
With salt. Like, with salt and amethyst and fucking black tourmaline.
Some sage,
like,
or
just
not.
Nope, just absolutely fucking not. This is my grandma's doll, and it looks just like you. That doll is dead now.
Sorry, no more doll.
But we are better parents than Coraline's parents. That's true. I would like to think, even just a little.
Just a little.
Just a little.
I was really concerned for Coraline because I think if the human body can only take so much acid every night before bed.
Yeah.
Like, she did acid every night before bed.
At first I was like, what, she had a lot of lemon and tomato? Yeah, no, she legit dropped some serious acid. I wrote down that the flower scene is the children's version of the Midsommar acid scene. although, even worse in actuality, because, like, at least in Midsommar, it's just like the flowers are moving and, like, existing, but in this movie they're straight up like trying to attack her.
Well, and then when she starts, I mean, throughout the whole movie she's going to sleep and then waking up to this new world, and even towards the end of the movie where she's collecting the other kids' souls, every single journey was such an acid trip.
Oh yeah, no, it's insane some of the shit she goes through. I've never taken acid or any other psychedelics. I don't know what they are like, but if they're like that, I probably don't want to try that, because that seems... I'd rather the Midsommar version than this.
You'd rather take mushrooms?
Maybe, although I do hate mushrooms.
Lemonade with special... No, it was tea.
Yeah, special teas.
Special teas, and then, well, then lemonade.
In the right environment, if my kids weren't around, maybe, but... like, the ass trips that she goes on, I mean, it's an insane world. But, you know, that's the thing is that the real world, quote-unquote real world of this movie is already so insane. If you look at the way that the characters are shaped, if you look at the, kind of the things that exist in that world, what's going to be even bonkier is going to be double acid. I don't know. It was nuts. It was a weird movie to watch a little high, too. But absolutely. Just, I mean, they did such a gorgeous job. And that's something that Raymon is unfortunately known for, is creating these, like, wonderful, vast, different worlds. I mean, look at the world of Stardust, you know, with the candle that can take them anywhere, with the witches.
Yeah, the whole world is so fascinating.
So fantastical.
And, yeah, all the different creatures or objects or things that like only that world has.
Unfortunately, he writes such good fantasy, and it is such good fantasy that then it makes you go, oh, god damn it, afterwards. But I did notice, too, that the well that Coraline is very intrigued by at the beginning and the one that she drops Other Mother's hand into at the end is surrounded by mushrooms, so it is essentially a fairy circle, which you don't fuck with. If you are ever in the forest, friends, listen to your friendly neighborhood Maggie here. If you're ever in the forest and you see an area that is like a perfect circle clearing, stay the fuck out of it. Yeah. Nature doesn't want you to go in there. Not for your cute Instagram pics, not for nothing, because there are some forces in those things that will fuck you up. And just avoid it. So as soon as I saw the fairy circle around the well, I was like, she shouldn't go in that. She went in it. But maybe it ultimately is a form of protection over Other Mother's hand getting out. But do not go into fairy circles, friends.
So yeah, a lot of crazy psychedelic
yeah.
moments in this movie. Another show that Gaiman worked on, or at least was adapted from a book, that also has some really psychedelic acid trips
mm-hmm.
of sequences was his American Gods.
You loved that show.
Show.
Yeah.
Was so...
Fucking...
And that was Brian also Brian Fuller. Too.
Fucking Brian Fuller.
Between when you take Neil Gaiman and Brian Fuller's yeah. mind, those two minds put together American Gods first
season. It's going to create an insane season. Something that's not going to last yeah. because...
It didn't last because
people
just didn't get behind it.
Yeah.
Kind of the
much
same
like
way.
Much like all of Brian Fuller's shit.
People just don't care for Brian Fuller.
Which is crazy because I know so many people that are obsessed with Hannibal. I couldn't watch it because it was too much for me, but I know people that are obsessed with it.
I think Pushing Hannibal was Daisies. The first... I think that was because it was an IP that people
yeah.
could get behind and knew. American yeah. Gods was very
yeah.
new.
And then Pushing Daisies was
Pushing
very,
Daisies was very...
The world of Pushing Daisies is one of my... Pushing Daisies is one of my favorite TV shows of all time. It is no longer up there on the list of like shows that deserved more because there's no way they could come back to it now and it could be the same. Like, no way whatsoever. The same way that people are still clamoring for a Firefly season 2. Like, it's never going to happen and it wouldn't be the same.
Stop asking.
Like, it could have happened 20 years ago, but it's not happening now. And that was the same with Pushing Daisies.
It's too late.
15 years ago, yes, I would have murdered for... another season of that, but now it's just too late. But that show is as dear to me as anything. I mean, the Pie Maker forever. Oh God, he will always have just unreasonable expectations for men. Lee Pace. Mm-mm-mm. Anyways, I did want to bring up the trapeze scene where Ian McShane, the other Ian McShane, is doing. Oh, no, it wasn't the trapeze. It wasn't Ian McShane. It was the actresses.
Yeah.
Are up on a trapeze thing. And when they unzip their fat bodies
and come out and young.
I legitimately gasped out loud. Like, that brought a moment out of me. And it was so good. And the other thing that I really loved about this movie that I want to bring up before we kind of teeter off here is the transition of the moon. At the end of the movie, it shows the moon, and then it turns into a white balloon.
Hmm.
And it was so beautiful. And in fact, you even went, God, the transitions in this movie when that happened. The artists, you know, the hundreds of artists unnamed to us because we don't have the time to go through that IMDb list. The amount of artists who put their love and their soul into this film and created something gorgeous. It's a beautiful testament to what Leica does, to what storytelling can be when it's creative and weird. And I am kind of shocked that this was a movie that existed on the periphery of my like understanding and pop culture knowledge, but wasn't big on it. Not to say that I'm going to become like a Coraline junkie like Randy, sup homie, but I do have definitely a newfound appreciation for this film.
So what would you give Coraline out of 5 stars?
Out of, boy, that's a tough one. I would give it a 4. My gut says 4. Because, I wasn't unhappy to be watching it. But I was a little like, well, okay, I guess we got to get Coraline out of the way. Here we go. Especially because we had to do a double movie this week. It was the movie that I was less excited about. But it's actually the movie that I enjoyed more, if that makes sense. So I would give Coraline a 4. It's beautifully done. It is so well put together. If you ignore the Neil Gaiman of it all, it's a near perfect film. So yeah, what about you, honey?
I too was going to give it a 4.
Excellent.
It is a fantastic animated film. The music and cinematography, the camera movements, the transitions.
It's a great kids movie too, especially if you've got like a spooky kid.
If you have a kid that is into... Like, if they liked Nightmare Before Christmas...
Yeah, they're going to like Coraline.
This one, I feel like, takes the bar up a little bit with being a little bit spookier and having a really interesting story that I think kids can relate to and adults. It was really nice seeing this again. For whatever reason, I kind of forgot about it.
Yeah. It was just, like I said, it doesn't... This movie exists like in the outside of our pop culture.
It doesn't hit you the same way when you think of some of the other animated movies on this list.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no real reason for that because I think it deserves to be on this list.
Yeah, it absolutely does. It wasn't one of our favorites beforehand, but it is now.
Well, now that we've talked about Coraline, comparing it to the other movies that we've talked about on the podcast mm-hmm. that were also nominated that same year, being Up and Fantastic Mr. Fox,
mm-hmm.
which movie would you have voted for that year?
Fantastic Mr. Fox. Up is darling and charming and it makes me ugly cry, but the story itself is kind of weak once you really get into what the story of Up is. You know, if you kind of strip away the emotional manipulation of that film, and I'm not saying anything bad about Up. I love that film. But stripping all of that away, the story is a little bit weak. Coraline, gorgeous film, really interesting story, you know, very well put together. But Fantastic Mr. Fox is so charming. It is so well done. The costumes in Coraline are great. I was telling Caveman that one of the employees at Leica had to knit clothing for the characters of this film using knitting needles the size of human hair. That's insane. Make bigger puppets, guys. Like, not smaller sweaters, bigger puppets. Jesus. Like, the artistry that went into Coraline is incredible. But Fantastic Mr. Fox is just a little bit extra for me. The set, the story, George Clooney, the way that they recorded outside to give it a natural feeling, the scene with the wolf at the end, like, that movie is so dear to me. So for me, it would be Fantastic Mr. Fox. What about you, honey?
That is kind of a tough question.
It is. You asked it, but it's hard.
I do really like Up. It's a really great film, but you're right. Like, when you peel back what it's trying to do to you emotionally and you just look at the story itself, it's a good story.
It's a good story, but not great.
Man, you compare it to Fantastic Mr. Fox and Coraline, I think those were the two movies that should have been the mm-hmm. bigger contenders.
I honestly, like, I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but I genuinely feel like about 80% of Up's good graces is because of that for the first 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Because that in its own right tells one of the most incredible stories any of us have ever seen. But then after that, we're like, oh, it's just a guy and a dog and a bird and a kid. Like, it's cute. It's funny. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. Like, it's very clever and fun. Yeah. But it's the first 15 minutes that makes up. And I'd say maybe like the last 15 minutes. Whereas Coraline and Fantastic Fox are very solid stories throughout.
And I think they look better. I mean, I know one was kind of on its, Up was on its, like, this is the precipice of what CG
animation can bring us. Yeah, it was very prime
Pixar. But Fantastic Mr. Fox and Coraline were two stop motion movies that just looked so beautiful.
And so gorgeously different in so many, like.
Both of them had such great music. Mm-hmm. Both of them had great actors doing great parts.
Yeah.
Both of them had really great stories. Like, Fantastic Mr. Fox has just such a fun, whimsical feeling about it, about all these animals banding together to try to outsmart the humans. And Coraline is this beautiful story of a daughter who just wants a little more attention from her parents. It's so hard. But I would probably have to go with Fantastic Mr. Fox just because I think it has the stronger story overall.
Yeah. And also, like, if you think about the visuals of the smoke being cotton wool, right? Or the
both of them do such amazing things.
They do, but there is something about the way that Fantastic Mr. Fox is, like, you know that that's cotton wool, but it looks so real, you don't care. The saran wrap that they use to create the waterfall that Fox and his wife stand in front of, that scene, which is one of the most beautifully shot scenes in all of animation, and it was made with saran wrap and puppets, like, there is a small edge that Fantastic Mr. Fox has for me in terms of the beauty and the story. Again, that moment with the wolf at the end is so gorgeously special.
Yeah.
And then, you know, hot box forever. Hot box. So, yeah, for me, it would definitely be that.
So, Maggie.
Yes, Caveman.
I have two questions for you.
Hit it!
Kevin Feige got in contact and told me about Moon Knight, and I said, who? The first time I put that the main costume on, I felt like a winner.
Oh, my baby! You know, Moon Knight came out 3 years ago today.
Jeez, 3 years already?
Yeah. God. It's been actually 3 years today as of the day that we're recording really? This, because I saw something on Instagram. The fact that my beloved, my sweet soft boy, is in the MCU, and he is so far not coming back for any of the movies, God damn you, or season two, God damn you, how dare you waste him? Anyways, the fact that he has been in one of my favorite MCU shows, and I have not watched it, I've only watched it twice all the way through, is shocking to me.
That is shocking.
Whereas,
and I just bought it for you on Blu-ray.
I know, in a beautiful steelbook case, and I will get around to it. I kind of mainly got that for like the future if Disney Plus ever goes under, because
give it time.
Falcon and the Winter Soldier is so much more beloved to me, and the fact that I pick Bucky Barnes over Oscar Isaac is insane. But I think it's time to rewatch Moon Knight because Oscar's so good in it. And
I've only seen it once.
Well,
when we
I would like to say let's rewatch it together, but we have got too much
so
shit.
So much other stuff.
I mean, we're trying to get through Andor.
Yeah,
Andor's we're trying to get through Big Mouth.
Big Mouth is coming back with their new season.
Their last season. There's just too much.
There's
but
a lot.
I just love him. Mark Spector, marry me.
So Maggie.
No, Stephen Grant.
So
yes,
Maggie.
What? Where am I? Who?
Would the presence of Oscar Isaac have made Coraline a better film?
Oh.
Or I guess the presence of his voice. Those beautiful...
Kevin Feige got in contact and told me about Moon Knight. And I said, who?
Who?
The first time I put that the main costume on, I felt like a winner.
I felt like a winner. He's so, such a dork. Oh, my God.
So imagine that so voice in Coraline.
Yeah.
Would that voice have made this movie better?
I don't think it would have made my score go up, but it would have been nice, yes. So I'm going to give it a tentative sure, but only because it just would have made me like, you know, I wouldn't have given it a bigger score, but I would have just enjoyed it thoroughly. Yeah.
So second question.
Oh, wow.
Which character would you have had Oscar Isaac play?
Well, not Keith David. Because I would love to see Keith David and Oscar Isaac interact in any way, shape, or form. Because I don't think that my ears could handle those two voices going after each other. John Hodgman did a great performance. And he does sing. So I would have liked to have Oscar in there as the father. Yeah, no. Because I wouldn't replace Ian McShane. I wouldn't replace French and Saunders. Terry Garr does a... No, not Terry Garr. Terry Hatcher.
That would have been interesting if Terry Garr.
Terry Garr. God, fucking, I love her so much. Rest in peace, my queen. And replacing Terry Hatcher would have been funny with Oscar Isaac if he just still played the mom. That was a thing that I did at the beginning of this podcast. I was always giving him the female roles. But no, I think he would have been great as the father. You know, yeah. Get a little bit of singing in there. Get his voice. And that has been this week's episode of Movie Mingle, and we hope that you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed bringing it to you. As ever, you can find us on Instagram, Threads, and Letterboxd at Movie Mingle Pod. You can find us on YouTube at MovieMinglePod@gmail.com. And you can write us any of your questions, thoughts, comments, and concerns at MovieMinglePod@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. Coming up next week, we will be doing Scott Pilgrim versus the World, which will be a fun rewatch of the manic pixie dream girl trope that was so prevalent in the 2000s, but also probably maybe one of Edgar Wright's best movies outside of the stuff he did with Nick Frost and Simon Pegg. We'll see. Join us next week to find out. And the following Saturday, after that episode comes out, we will be dropping our April bonus episode on one of Caveman's favorite movies that I shockingly haven't seen, The Iron Giant. So turn in for that one. It's going to be a fantastic time. As ever, thank you so much, friends, for listening, for, you know, caring, for loving our show still at 60 episodes. So congratulations, Caveman, on 60 episodes. I'm very proud of you for it. And I'm really proud of me, too, because we've done a great job here at Movie Mingle Pod. Tell your friends about it. Get more people interested in it. And maybe season two can even be bigger, better, and brighter with guest stars. Keith David Madeley. Anyways, until then, take good care of yourselves. Be safe in this big wide world. Do not let anybody sew buttons into your eyeballs. And go mingle. Bye.
Yeah, I've got to see how much juice San Francisco cocksuckers got.
Are you an effective team?
We are an effective team.
Let them fight.
How did you just do that?
I'm a really good lawyer.
Here on Caladan, we've ruled by air power and sea power. On Arrakis, we need to cultivate desert power.
Welcome, Mr. Beach. What's that bar? I'm a little confused.
Well, we wouldn't want that, would we?
I don't want to brag, but I will. I was in the Avengers.
The Avengers?
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you. What is that?
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Toga. Toga. Toga.